Welcome. I'm your hostess, Tanai Milgram, a former commitment phobe turned intimacy expert. My search for answers to figure out why it was so hard for me to be in a relationship took me on a path to understanding how to create intimacy in not just romantic, but all relationships. In each episode, I'm going to be sharing what I've learned and experienced alongside with incredible guests about how to create that vulnerability, connection, and authenticity that it takes to have the intimacy that you deeply crave in your relationships. This is Commitment Phobe. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. Today, I have with me Rael Castano. He's a relationship coach, author of the book Authentic Relating, A Guide to Rich, Meaningful, Nourishing Relationships. And he's also the co-founder of ART International, which is the world's largest authentic relating training company. And it's been a really big part of my journey the past few years as I've done level one, level two, and we'll be doing level three of the ART curriculum. And Rael was my instructor for level two, which involves some of the most uncomfortable and deep experiences that I had in relating. Just a lot of like mindfuck moments and a lot of learning about myself in different ways. Ways like hearing what people think about me behind my back or what people see in me when they can't hear me but are watching me speak. Just different ways in relation to others that we don't normally get to do on the day-to-day basis. So welcome on the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Is there anything that I missed in introducing you? How do you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, based in Boulder, Colorado, I guess, just to give people a reference point.
Yeah. So let's start with your story and how you got into this. You got into this work.
Yeah.
Where what's your starting point? Where do you like to start when you tell your story?
Yeah. Well, I guess I would start with how much of my life I spent totally disconnected and disassociated from my emotions, from my body, living with a lot of unprocessed childhood trauma that I wasn't aware of and yet was running me and influencing me, especially in close relationships, a series and pattern of struggle in close relationships that I couldn't understand or see why tensions arising without any kind of understanding of where they're coming from or what their source might be. And spent 30 something years living in that way. And just didn't know that there was really anything else. That was my status quo, and just imagine I would live the rest of my life that way. And then some shit went down in my marriage, started falling apart and getting more severe and more confronting. And then at some point I just hit a rock bottom where I was just really shattered. And that was at that point, as it is for many people, hitting the rock bottom that acts as a catalyst for, okay, I need help. And I didn't know where to get help or what that help would look like. I just knew I was going to need some kind of guidance in a way that I just never had considered or perceived to be available before. So I just basically threw my hands open to the universe, just help me, show me anything. I'll do anything, go anywhere. And the universe responded. A lot of people around me offered the first few steps of kind of figuring out what the hell was going on with me. And I went to tons of workshops, a lot of therapy, medicine ceremonies, retreats, finding any teacher that I could, reading books, just book after book after book, and just kind of bombing myself with this whole world of transformation, personal development, awakening. I didn't have any sort of contact or experience really with spirituality. So it was my first introduction to something transcendent, beyond just this sort of flesh and bone experience. And in the midst of all the things that I was doing and trying out, a lot of which really helped me and offered guidance and resonance, in the midst of that, a friend invited me to a circling workshop in Boulder. And circling now I know is a subset of the authentic relating world. And the moment that I stepped into my first circle there, I was like my whole life transformed. I had the experience of being completely welcome, completely and unconditionally accepted in all my shit, all my parts, even the parts that they couldn't see that I just kept locked away, shame and trauma, and just being held in this energy of such pure welcoming, I had the experience of feeling at home, really maybe for the first time in my body and in my life. And it was such a profound experience. I also felt so worthy of their interest and curiosity in that first circle. And so I was just like, this is magic. Like, what the hell? This is pure magic. I need to understand this. I need to go much further in. So right after that, signed up for a circling facilitator training.
And what is circling? I've only done authentic relating, so I don't know what circling is.
Yeah. Well, they've kind of evolved in parallel. Mm-hmm. Circling is essentially all the authentic relating skills and tools practiced inside of a specific format. And that format is a circle of usually 5, 6, 7 people. And most often, all the attention stays with one person for the duration of the circle. And the idea is to really fully be with them and to get a sense of what it's like to be them. To be them and to be with them. And it's all present moment. There's no like stories and biography. It's really what's happening right here, right now in this connective space. And it's hugely compelling, you know, for the person who's receiving that attention. That quality of presence and curiosity and attention, of hearing other people's impact of what it's like to be with that person being circled, it can really bring up, it can stir up and retrieve so many of these lost parts of ourselves into a more unified and integrated experience of self. And that alone is just so healing and so powerful. It's like, it's okay to be me exactly as I am. And I, you know, now I've since learned, you know, we generally all long for this experience of being deeply seen and to be seen in a way in which we don't have to alter or modify some part of ourselves to be accepted, to be loved, to be honored. We are worthy of that honoring exactly as we are. And that's an incredibly precious experience. So that's really the gift that circling offers. And so, yeah, I went all the way in and, you know, learned how to lead and facilitate circles, started teaching circling very soon after. And yeah, just watching the repercussions of my exposure to this practice ripple out into all the rest of my life, my relationship with my partner, my kids, my colleagues at work, friends, community, strangers. And then I really started realizing like how closeted and closed and removed and protected and withdrawn I'd spent so much of my life. And this practice really helped me step out from behind the curtain and start to experience what really were the first intimate relationships, conversations, interactions that I'd ever felt. And it just showed me what real intimacy actually is and how it feels. And yeah, so then from there, I just, you know, joined the staff and just continued to deepen my understanding and study and practice application of these skills. And then at some point it occurred to me like, wow, this really feels like the medicine of connection that is so missing from so many people's lives. and families' lives and communities' lives. And so I started thinking about how can we teach this work and share this work with people that doesn't involve having to participate in the structure and format of a circle. And that was the seed of what became art. It was the vision of deconstructing the constituent component skills and tools of a circle of circling, and being able to teach those as everyday skills for people that they could apply in their ongoing daily lives with everyone in their lives, to experience that same quality, both to experience and to offer the experience of that same quality of real welcoming and being seen and offering the seeing for others. And yeah, so that's what fed into art, and started to shape the first courses that we taught, were a training in what we thought were really fundamental building blocks of human connection, and really believed that we could share these with anyone. And it's around that time too that I started volunteering at the Boulder County Jail. And for me, that was to test the idea that I could teach these skills and tools to anyone, including and maybe even especially people who never otherwise would have come to a workshop or knew workshops existed or had any sort of connection to the personal development world. And yeah, I proved that hypothesis very correct. It was so powerful to see the transformation that was occurring in inmates in jail, and then we expanded it to the whole statewide prison system. And I came back from that just like absolutely on fire, like so lit up. Like, we need to bring this around the world. We need to share this as far and wide as possible.
Wow, that's incredible. I had a period in my life where I was also volunteering for an organization that helps women transition out of prison and to get jobs. And it was also around the same time that I had read a book about someone who wrote a book called The Master Plan. His name is Chris Brown. And I got to read his story and kind of what led up to him getting in prison. And it was the first time that I really got the concept that there aren't bad people, you know, that it's just trauma that leads people to do certain things. And we, you know, just talked about it before hitting record, that even I said, you know, gr as a kid, I just had so much like anger and violence arise in me that maybe I would have been, you know, one of those women, had I not been surrounded by so much love and acceptance and a mom that let me, you know, tantrum it out whenever I felt anger rising inside me.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, honestly, just because I've been so steeped in this world of human connection as long as I have, I think it's actually the nature of dysfunctional connection from an early age that is a massive contributor to dysfunction in life later on. And as I started to really learn the stories of inmates I was working with, I mean, the one thing they all had in common was a really dysfunctional culture of human connection from basically birth, you know, full of abuse and manipulation, and you know, people whose responsibility it was to model loving connections just not at all doing so. And we are, you know, as I'm sure you know, and many listeners know, we are connective creatures. We are wired for connection. And when we don't get that connection as a nutrient, as an infant, as a baby, as a child, yeah, it really has massively harmful and dangerous effects as we grow up. And that was my case too. You know, I did not have effective models of loving connection, of healthy, you know, unconditional welcoming. And it definitely produced a lot of trauma within me. And that's why it was just so powerful, so healing and transformational to stumble into this practice and then see myself really start to heal these old wounds. And then as I started to share it and teach it and travel realizing how many people, how many of us did not have the essential nutrient of effective and healthy human connection from an early age, and the repercussions of that as we become adults, and how those have affected our adult relationships. And so that's really fueled this mission to, you know, we can't go back in time, but we can offer it now. And for me, in my experience and being with so many other people who have adopted and really taken on and embodied this practice, the healing can be so retroactive. It can reach back and provide a lot of healing for all the shit we went through earlier in life.
Yeah, it's like that saying that we're wounded in relationship, so we heal in relationship.
Yeah, totally. And I also really want to like highlight relationship with our own selves as well. And everything we teach in the world of authentic relating has as much implication in supporting and fostering a healthy, meaningful, loving, and whole relationship with self as much as it does with other people.
Yeah, for me, one of those that kind of heals my relationship with self while being in connection with another is the noticing, right? I'd love for you to explain what that is, but just to share the impact it had on me, you know, there's this exercise of naming what you're noticing. And for me, it's been more meditative. Like, I've reached more meditative states doing that exercise than actually than in actual meditation. It brings me so to the present that I'm in this like ethereal like state where I'm out of, you know, I'm out of my mind and I'm totally here while doing that exercise. So I'd love for you to explain what it is and how it came about.
Yeah, authentic relating has been called relational meditation, where the object of our meditational presence is the relational space itself. And so that really brings us into presence, and presence really being in the here and now is where we experience the deepest connection, the most intimacy, the deepest experience of being seen and seeing another. And partly the reason why that is because when we're really committed to the here and now, we can't rely on programs and scripts and conditioning that we so often lean on as a crutch in conversation and interactions. And we like pick up these, examples, frameworks, structures for how to move through the world. We take those on, they become assumptions, mental models in our system. And it's shocking, honestly, once you see it, how much we actually rely on and invoke these well-grooved mental models that we've absorbed over our lifetime, especially early on, to move through the world. We're almost on autopilot a lot of the time. And so by bringing our attention to the here and now, and as you said, the practice for being in the here and now is to notice what's happening. Notice what's happening in myself, notice what's happening in the other, notice what's happening in the shared space. There is no script for the present moment, because it's never happened before. It's by definition unscripted. And so it compels us to let go of these established models that we have in our minds for how to navigate a particular situation. And so we're thrown into the unknown. It's a mystery. And I think there's a part of us that comes alive in the mystery, the magic that is the unknown. That's the uncharted. And it's in that place that we can discover new parts of ourselves and each other, and explore those, illuminate those. You know, so much of authentic relating is illuminating these shadow parts, these hidden parts of what it is to be human. And often what is illuminated isn't necessarily fun and comfortable and easy to see and feel. And yet, by committing to really exploring this territory, it leads us to an experience of being whole in our bodies, whole in our lives, whole in relationship. And that, for me and for us, is the path of healing. is becoming a whole and integrated and unified self. And when we do that at the level of self, there's the opportunity for that to scale to the level of family and of community and even of the world. We can start to see this value for welcoming the whole world exactly as it is. We don't need it to be different or need it to conform to our version of how we think it's supposed to be. We can be with it exactly as it is. And being with self, with other, with the world, with the moment, exactly as we are, they are, it is, for me, that is the definition of real intimacy.
Yeah, that resonates with me too, and it makes me think of you know, the Tanai as I know Tanai to be, and what does that mean when I'm with someone, right? Do I want to be sweet? Do I want to be funny? Do I want to be calm? Like that's been a big one for me actually. A lot of people have actually even reflected that I like seem like I'm holding back, and that, or it's been like there's its light and its shadow. People tell me that I look really at peace a lot of the times and grounded. And then at the same time, there's people that it makes them feel uncomfortable. Like someone once told me they want to put me on a bridge and watch me scream. And so there's like the Tanai that I want the people to see. And then in the noticing, if I'm with someone and I'm saying, I notice that I have a headache, or I notice that I'm feeling nervous, like that has nothing to do with the identity I've created of Tanai, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a transcendent experience.
Yeah, I was gonna say I've even felt high.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's the experience when time and space sort of disappear, become, you know, the fade to the background. You know, it's not like you have to try to conjure something. It's just like right there. It's this transcendent experience. You know, it's like so common for people who are in this world, in this practice, to have interactions and conversations with people that just go on indefinitely, and you have no idea that time is passing. You have no idea that things are happening around you. There's just such a complete immersion in the flow, the current, that is this quality of interaction with people. I mean, one of the things I love doing, and I'm an introvert, like by design and nature, it's safer just to be inside of myself. So, you know, it takes a bit of extra effort to come out and extend out. And one of the practices I adopted a long time ago, which I still practice, is whenever I travel on airplanes, I see if it's possible to have some kind of connection, and even intimate connection, with whoever I happen to sit next to on the airplane. And it's wild how frequently and really reliably it is that I get to have that experience of dropping in with somebody I've never met, know nothing about. We go on this journey into the unknown and discover all kinds of treasures along the way. And like a, you know, 8-hour flight is over like instantly. It's wild. It's like a trip how that seems to happen. Yeah.
I mean, even just thinking about it, I already feel so much in my body of like, wow, can I, you know, is that how is that possible, dropping in with someone else for that long?
Yeah.
And you're sharing that as an introvert, which I consider myself more of an introverted extrovert.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that sounds really powerful.
I think that's one good example, is just to notice where it is that we end up constraining ourselves according to labels that we use to define ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. For like every introvert, there usually are moments when they're like, yeah, I'm out. I want to be with people. You know, I'm being nourished by being out with people. And for any extrovert, vice versa, there are moments when they just want to hide and be alone and withdraw. And so a lot of this work of authentic relating actually is to notice these constraining labels that we put on ourselves, each other, whole relationships, and then feel compelled to live out the definition of those labels without even imagining, like, well, what would life be like if I just unlabeled myself and I just lived moment to moment authentically and see what this moment invites me to do and how this moment invites me to show up and then respond in that way. That there's real magic there.
Yeah. And so much of it involving listening to the body, right?
Yeah. Like just attunement to the body, to the moment, to others, to the space.
Yeah. Something that you mentioned that you wanted to do that was like alive in your life is tension in your relationships that you mentioned, you know, you could talk about. And I was curious about that. What you were referring to, that you know experience tension. I mean, part of what I've gotten in authentic relating is exactly that, like how to be with tension in relationships. So,
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like acknowledging that tension occurs and exists really everywhere in so many places. I mean, even outer space, you know, like how planets orbit around a sun. For instance, that it's tension that's keeping that orbit what it is and sustaining it. It's also the tension of it's like the understanding that you can never really fully, totally know another person. No matter how close you might ever get, there's always a slight gap between my experience and your experience. And if I forget that or don't think that's the case, then you just become the subject of all my assumptions about you. And I lose all curiosity. I don't see and recognize that actually there's a mystery living in you all the time. You know, even couples who are together decades, those that actually can sustain an aliveness through those decades are couples who I think really recognize this, that the person across them, even though they've woken up next to them for 30 years or whatever, there's still a mystery there, and there's still something worth being curious about. And it's that tension, I think, healthy tension, beautiful tension, that can sustain the orbit, mutual orbit of a couple for decades. And they never lose the aliveness. It never just becomes this scripted thing that they're just living out. So, you know, and then I'm a dating coach as well, coach people in the dating world. And so we spend a lot of time looking at the nature of what we call polarity. Polarity is the expression of tension in the spectrum of masculine and feminine and how we embody and channel those energies. And for attraction, eroticism, aliveness in that context, there has to be some measure of polarity, which means we're willing to embody the opposing energetic forces of masculine and feminine and meet each other in this tension between the two. And it's generative. It's literally what creates life. If we're all the same and there's no tension, it's like a death. There's a stagnancy. There's no movement, right? And so tension is generative. It creates energy. As anyone who's been on a date, you know, where you have that sense of polarity would know. And then, you know, the art of tending to that polarity, that energy into a relationship. And then you can look at it at the societal level, right? Like there's a healthy tension that needs to occur for society to evolve and to move forward and to integrate different perspectives of how life should be, how the world should be. You know, if you just look at political, the social spectrum, you know, left and right, you know, Democrat, Republican, whatever the opposing parties are. When a system is working with healthy tension, it integrates the best of these different opposing perspectives into a unified way forward. But then, of course, the tension can override that healthy balance. And then each end can spin out. And then that's where you have war and conflict and breakdown, societal breakdown. So you need that calibration I think of a healthy tension that can keep two opposing perspectives in orbit with each other, and that orbit can generate forward movement, forward evolution, new life, steps taken along a path.
What a completely fresh perspective on tension. Right, because I mean, at least how I grew up was very anti-tension, anti-conflict. I don't know, I would say actually there was a lot of tension, but very little outward conflict. I could feel the tension in the silence.
Yeah.
But definitely grew up being told not to say anything that would make people uncomfortable or hurt people's feelings.
Yeah.
And then presently in my relationships, there's times when someone will say something or do something and I feel some tension, and it's such a practice to just even hold that tension and not freak out about it, not think there's anything wrong because there's tension present.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Well, the practice is to notice the tension and then to bring it forward and offer it into the relational space.
Right.
And then when you're willing to do that, and you're both really sharing a context of recognizing the generative qualities of tension, that tension creates new possibilities in relationship that weren't there before. The conflict is an absolutely critical, necessary, and healthy component of conscious relationship. It's exactly a relationship's mechanism for unearthing the hidden, the unspoken, the implicit, right? And bringing it to the surface. We actually have an opportunity to be with it and to feel it and to let it shape the next step in how we move forward together. Right? It's like, for us, conflict is so powerfully transformational when it's contextualized in this way and not something to be avoided or suppressed or made wrong.
Right. Yeah. There's what was in your book and in the training I did with you, we did the listen, reflect, and share impact. No, that was in level one, which, yeah, is so powerful. And I'd love to hear you, yeah, share a little bit about what's missing in our listening and most people's listening these days. And the concept of sharing impact, it's just so radically different from most people know.
Right. Yeah, much I could say. I mean, one thing I've discovered about authentic relating over the years is that I realize it's so much actually less about expressing, although that's super important, but it's actually so much more about listening. I would say that authentic relating really is much more about listening, learning how to listen, and offering listening, real listening, to people that I'm in a relationship with, than it is actually about saying stuff. It's the listening, I think, that is so powerful about this practice. And then, you know, applying that quality of listening everywhere, which for me is a critical skill for attunement. And attunement then is what makes it possible to respond intelligently to an otherwise unpredictable stream of life coming at us, instead of just constantly reacting, just getting nailed, bam, bam, reacting to this, reacting to that. If we actually can attune to the nature of the present moment and our environment, inside and outside, it moves us towards responsiveness. And that's proactive rather than reactive. Listening, often people will, you know, what are you listening to? Often people are preparing what they're going to say in response to the person talking, right? And this is part of the scripted nature of interaction, is we don't seem to be able to abide by the gaps or the silence in between verbal exchanges. And so typically, as the other person is talking, I'm already preparing or rehearsing or extracting out what I'm going to say when they're done talking. And if I'm doing that, I'm listening to myself. I'm listening to the voices being formulated in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not with them anymore. You know, they'll say a thing, then I'll have to cue up what I'm going to say in response. And from that point forward, I'm not with them anymore. I'm with me. And that's why the reflect step of listen, reflect your impact is also so powerful, is that that means I have to stay with them. For me to be able to reflect them, this is what I'm hearing you say. This is me being a mirror to you. I have to actually really pay attention to them and really pay attention to what they're saying so that I can be with them and reflect for them. And it's wild how scarce it is that people generally have the experience of being reflected by another. It's just a tennis match. It's like, bam, ping pong, back and forth.
Yeah.
You know, you're saying your thing. I'm just waiting to say my thing. Then you're waiting to say your thing. We're not actually with each other, you know? So it's listening in a way that empties my own mind and really puts my attention and presence with the other person. And then furthermore, it's not just being confined to listening to the words coming out of their mouth. It's listening to their whole being. And if you start to expand your listening to include their whole being, you realize how much they are expressing beyond and behind and around just the words themselves. All the nonverbal means of expression. There are some studies done that seem to indicate that up to 70, 75% of all communication occurs nonverbally. So that's body language, how we move our hands, how we move our bodies, facial expression, pace, volume, tone of the voice, all these little micro expressions that we convey through our face. There's so much actually happening at the nonverbal level. And so listening can include all that. And all of that then provides much broader, deeper context to the words that somebody is selecting to express themselves. And then even further and deeper than that is what we call listening for the why in another person. The why is their core, their essence. It's where their core values live. And essentially, I mean, basically, we all live our lives as pure expressions of the values that we hold in our core. We don't actually live our lives out of alignment with our core values. And we may not even know, and often don't know, what those core values are. And even so, we're living as an expression of those core values that we hold. And so if you really want to know a person and understand a person and empathize with a person and see a person as deep as they go, it's a matter of listening for their why. Getting a sense of what matters to them, what they care about, what moves them, what they would get up and fight for, what would move them to emotion. The source of all these things live at the core why of a person. And that quality of listening can unlock and have us see a person that deeply.
When you talk about it this way, and I'm just remembering my experience, it just makes a human like a masterpiece, you know? It's that curiosity that you mentioned of meeting someone with looking at them like the mystery and just going deeper, which requires so much slowing down and paying attention.
Yeah, it's this really fascinating dichotomy in that each person is like mind-blowingly unique. I mean, there's not only 8 billion people on the planet, but there's been something like 115 billion people that have ever lived. And every single one of those 115 billion people is a unique manifestation of being. Nobody has walked the exact same path as another person. And we're this unbelievably unique constellation of endless moments of experience that we've had over the course of our lives. And that presents this near limitless landscape and territory to be explored and illuminated and delighted by and awed by. But the dichotomy is that actually we all share a common universal human experience as well. We all cry and laugh and smile and feel very similarly. When we get mad around the world, anger seems to manifest in very similar ways. Sadness, delight, children, you look at children, infants all around the world. They clearly share some kind of common human experience. And so it's like this wild thing that it's like I can see myself in you. I can recognize a part of me by being with you and this part of you. And yet you also are so unique and so different than me.
Yeah, it was really powerful for me. I think I the early, like the younger 20-year-old version of me could have really used that when I started dating, because I would see all these dating profiles and think all these guys looked so boring. Like, I lived in New York and it's like, oh, another one that works in banking and this and that. And having this practice just invited me to go deeper into what's present right now. And it just, I, yeah, growing up, I had a really big thing around being bored and something being boring. And this was just an invitation to just get curious, yeah, to be like a little kid and meet the world in that way and meet another person in that way.
Totally. Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. I mean, there's that again, that mind-blowing richness in every single person. It's like often I just feel overwhelmed, especially when I'm in a city or like a big, place where there's a lot of people. It's like almost overwhelming being surrounded by basically infinite depths of unique human experiences. Every single person having walked this fascinating path in life. I generally try to move through the world with the belief that there's something incredibly precious that I could learn from every single person that I ever encounter. And honestly, that's another reason why I'm so passionate about this work, is that for me, authentic relating is a key that unlocks those treasures and insights that live in every single person that we come across. Like a treasure chest. And who knows what you'll see when you open it.
Yeah, that's beautiful. What's been your experience with the last step of sharing impact? How is that uniquely different than, Yeah, how is that special? The act of sharing impact with somebody. Why do you teach that?
It's a recognition that we are actually being impacted by being with each other all the time. Whether we realize it or not, feel it or not, even if we don't feel anything, being with somebody, that also is impact, actually, and can
Well,
be.
hearing someone speak and then say, like, I don't feel anything
Yeah,
from what you
to me,
said.
that's fascinating. Wow, like,
Oh.
what? Am I blocked in some way? Am I protecting myself in some way? Am I
Yeah.
judging you in some way? Like
Huh.
that's super interesting to me. So impact really is recognizing, yeah, you're impacting me by being with me and my being with you. And I say to people who are coming into this practice, just so you know, caveat, before you venture much further into this practice, if you commit to it and you follow it, it will make you so much more sensitive in every way, emotionally, energetically, to life, to people, to yourself. Get ready.
Yeah, no, for sure. I feel a lot of discomfort when I'm around people who have very like small talk conversation, the typical like, hi, how are you? What do you do? I feel very uncomfortable. I don't know how to explain it. It's like so heady that I need grounding. And I was once on a date where I shared with this man how I felt uncomfortable, and I don't know how we got to it, but it was like about how he was leaning in. And so he asked if I would like for him to lean back, which was awesome that he asked me. And once he did, I felt so much better. And it was like, wow, here I was making all these stories of why I felt, uncomfortable with this guy, but really it was just something energetic. Like I just didn't like that he was like in my space. And when he leaned back, it was like, ah, okay, I'm good.
Totally. That could be a really fun experiment, is to like actually really notice what happens in you when he leans forward and in, and when he leans back. You could play with that. You know, I mean, discomfort, like you're describing, is in our world not at all something to be alleviated necessarily. It can show us new parts of ourselves that we haven't seen before. I mean, sometimes just being in the unknown itself is just inherently uncomfortable, even though there's nothing wrong, there's nothing bad happening. And then if we can get curious and like sort of stay there for a moment, where is this experience coming from? What am I really feeling? What is it in response to? Like, what is there here for me to get curious about? Especially in, you know, long-term intimate relationships, that there's enormous insight and intelligence available if you're willing to explore and get curious about uncomfortable experiences together.
For me, the sharing impact was uncomfortable because, like you said, you're just sharing in real time what's happening as you're in, for example, listening to someone, right? The impact of what I'm hearing, which again is so different from what would be according to my identity. Like what could I say that would seem nice? Or what could I say that would make this person feel seen? Or what could I say that would share my opinion, as opposed to just sharing, hey, this is what happens in me when I hear you. And sometimes that's scary for me to share too. But most of the time it's received with so much openness and gratitude. Like, wow, how refreshing to just hear, you know, what's happening in you when you hear me. And it's fun and also, yeah, like interesting to be curious about that. And I've had situations where it's edgy of like someone sharing their feelings with me and then me sharing that I feel angry hearing that or upset hearing that when they're being really vulnerable or, you know.
Yeah, totally. People, we seem to love edginess. We're like drawn to it. Yeah, in all these different ways, you know? It's like we're like we love novelty, edginess, new, what's gonna happen, surprise, you know, shake us out, just the mundane, the repetitive. Yeah, one of my favorite pieces of advice for people in the dating world is to at some point on their date ask, how's this day going? Like the simplest question. And like, again, you can't fall back on a script because it's now, it's this moment, it's this date, it's our interaction, it's you and me. Never had this before. And like, I want to answer too. It's like a question for both of us, you know? Let's check in. How's the day going? And let's like be brazenly honest. You respond to that inquiry.
Yeah, it's incredible how, at least in my case, like everything that I was looking for in harmony and like me liking you liking me is everything that I've found in the aliveness of sharing the honest thing. You know, like there's even I share this a lot on my podcast, but some of my most alive and rich conversations have been ones where I'm rejected or I'm rejecting somebody else. There's just so much honesty. It's delicious. Like it's like so intimate, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's where we go off script and step into the wild unknown. Like every moment is uncharted territory.
There's no agenda, right? Like I'm no longer trying to get you to like me, so now it's just totally real.
Well, and you start to realize, like, man, how much of our lives we spend trying to manage other people's perception of us. Whether it's to be liked, to be respected, to be seen in a certain way, you know, and we're like contorting ourselves to try to like induce a perception in the other person of us. It's fucking exhausting.
Truly. Yes. Yeah. Like right now, my latest is not smiling when people are talking or when they're sharing a story that's really exciting, like just being comfortable with just keeping, you know, my face serious.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah, it's so nice.
It's fun. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah. Like, how often is it that we greet each other and say, "Hey, how's it going?" And the other person says, "Good, how are you?" Like automatic, just scripted, like literally, I mean, I'm still so prone to this. Like I'll be sick as shit and just feeling like hell or having a terrible day. And somebody will ask me, "Hey, how's it going?" And I'll literally just say, "Good, how are you?" Like I'm not good at all. I'm this thing from good. What the hell am I saying? Where is this coming from?
Yeah. But
You
do you
know?
have a, I don't like, I have this, so I'm wondering if you do. Do you have that little moment where it's like you assess if you want to like say how you really feel, but then you're like, eh, I'm so lazy. And then you just say good.
I mean, I'm like, what would happen if I said, you know, honestly, I feel like shit today. Like, who knows? Like, again, now we're in uncharted territory.
Yeah.
Who knows what might happen if I'm actually real and honest and authentic and transparent in the world? Like in my experience, way cooler and more fulfilling and enlivening and fascinating things happen when I move through the world that way than just running programs all the time.
Yeah. That's it. It takes so much courage and trust, but totally worth it. I agree.
And it's permission. It's permission for others.
Yeah.
Like, oh, if he can do it, I can do it. People are just, honestly, I think craving, starving for this quality of interaction, you know? And they just don't quite know maybe how to get into it, you know? And so if somebody's there to lead the way, hey, it's this way, like, come with me. Almost everyone I've ever encountered are like, hell yeah, I'll go with you.
Yeah, something that I get a lot, especially from men, is they reflect on my listening and when I just say like, wow, thank you for sharing this and this and that. And they're like, wow, thank you so much for not interrupting me. It was almost uncomfortable. I'm so used to being interrupted or being talked back to that it just felt so good to be received by you.
Yeah.
And like you said, it's, yeah, definitely people are starving for this. And now you said that you're stepping away from art and diving into exploring other things, including indigenous wisdom. So I'd love to end with you sharing just what, like in particular to relating relationships, what's something that you're already getting the download from that we've forgotten? What's some of that indigenous wisdom about relating and relationships that you've been touched by and would like to share with the world?
Yeah, well, it speaks to what I was saying earlier about this idea and this experience of a shared and universal human experience. You know, like we share so much in common with each other. And it's like things that we share with our great ancestors. You know, the idea of like sitting in a circle, you know, and sharing what's alive and present for us, being together in circle, maybe around a fire, maybe with music, maybe with dancing. Like we are moved by that quality of shared experience in such a similar way than people were moved countless generations ago. And so for me, a lot of this new exploration of indigenous wisdom and the threads of ancestry is really connecting with that unbroken sense of lineage of a shared human experience. It puts me in place. It gives me a sense of linking, of being a link to something far greater and older than just this one little life. It gives me a sense of real orientation, of belonging, of being part of, yeah, this immense human experience of existence that stretches back so far behind us and will stretch forward until the last human is alive. And yeah, to me that helps really ground me, and it puts all the little things that I worry about and get anxious about and worked up about in perspective. Yeah. So that, and then, you know, to me, like this, the idea of lineage for me is a repository of accumulated and accumulating human wisdom. You know, it's like so many people have gone before us and have learned so much about the nature of being human, moving through this world. And like they've added to this repository of knowledge and wisdom that is our shared lineage. And like, you know, for example, like my ex-father-in-law, he's a master builder and has spent his entire life learning how to build things. Buildings, furniture, you name it. And when he dies, that knowledge and wisdom dies with him forever. I mean, forever. And so it's not only in my interest, but it's almost my duty and responsibility to sit at his feet, in a sense, to open myself to receiving the transmission of wisdom that he's accumulated his entire life and that his elders taught him, so that it can continue, so I can teach it to my kids and I can build shit for my community and my people. It just seems like vital. So yeah, I really called into this and excited to spend more time, like, yeah, learning and learning my place in this thread of lineage.
That's super cool. And I feel like I just heard of this at the perfect time for myself, because my brother sent me like 50 pages of a diary of my grandma's sister, who I didn't even know she had a sister. And I'm reading all these stories and just asking myself, like, how will this impact me? Or like, what's the significance of reading this right now? And so I'm really going to meditate on what you just said. And just inviting myself and anyone listening to consider the wisdom that we can gain from the elders, because so much is about how can we do it differently than them, or, you know, that's just what I hear mostly, of just how can we not do it like they did? They caused all this trauma. They didn't know how to do this and that. And this just, brings like a lot of reverence and respect and honoring of the wisdom that they carry.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, I've, you know, been spending my life accumulating knowledge in so many ways, and I think pretty useful knowledge, at least some of it. You know, and yeah, it'd be really meaningful as I get into my older years to have a means to transmit that fucking hard-earned, accumulated knowledge and wisdom for the benefit of those who are coming after me.
Yeah. Well, on that note, thank you so much for sharing some of that knowledge and wisdom here with everybody listening and with me. I feel that meditative magic in me. It's so lovely to talk to you, because you have such a grounded, slow pace when you share. So thank you for coming on and playing. Is there anything that you'd like to share with my audience and how they can connect with you, or anything that you're offering right now?
Yeah, sure. You can find more info on me at rylecastano.com, and then check out my book on Amazon, Authentic Relating. that you mentioned earlier. And then anything authentic relating related, you can go check out Art's website at authenticrelating.co. And then, yeah, I would just say, reach out to someone sometime, somewhere. Just if it occurs to you and you're inspired to, reach out and make contact. It really counts. It really matters.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining us today on Commitment Phobe. I hope that our conversation has inspired you to have a little more courage to let go of those fears and do something different than you have in your relationship so that you open your heart to create more intimacy in your life. If you found value, please, please, please subscribe, rate, leave a review. Share with your friends, share on your social media. Your feedback means the world to me and helps me spread this message around the world. And remember, your journey towards deep, meaningful connection starts with the courage to be authentically you. Till next time.